Friday night on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Justin Cuthbert and J.D. Bunkus. Ailish Forfar will be back on Monday. We'll have Elliot Friedman in a few minutes here to tee up the return of Kyle Dubas. Maple Leafs host the Penguins on Hockey Night in Canada tomorrow. And in a half hour, we'll have Will Liu call in from Scotiabank Arena ahead of the rematch, Hawks and Raptors. But let's quickly visit last night while we have a minute here.
Sure.
A wild OT loss for the Maple Leafs. You threw out the idea that Columbus or Columbus adjacent could be the new measuring stick game, that, you know, avoiding the predictably poor performance against a bad team was the new criteria. So a loss to Columbus last night.
Mm-hmm.
Does that tell us something about the current state of the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, I think it does. It tells you that some things never change. So, it was predictable, right? Didn't everybody say Leafs are going to lay an egg in this game? Didn't you believe that? Did you think that they were going to come out and that they were going to step on their throats, that they were going to play just a physical, tough, focused 60 minutes?
Yeah.
And okay, part of me goes, I don't have my best day every day, right? You have your best? You feel like you do your best every single time you show up on this?
No, I don't.
Other days, like today, potentially, like Friday, when you didn't even show up with a laptop and you're thinking about the concert that you're going to later, or some of us going to basketball games, so their minds might be somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Natural human thing. But yeah, I kind of want to see the Leafs treat the lesser lights like a business trip, you know? A real business trip. Take care of business, entertain the fans. I guess actually they did do that. They did end up entertaining them. But yeah, I'd like to see them be less predictable, playing down to their opponents at times. So there's a measuring stick component to it.
So what do you think happens then when we see what we saw for two periods change abruptly? Is it just, hey, one went in and it just snowballs from there? Or is there something deeper than that?
Like, do you want my honest opinion, or do you want my, like,
I want your honest
person
opinion?
Because I can do the
whole... If you're willing to give your honest opinion, I'd like it.
Okay, my honest opinion is that Blue Jackets team is just an incredible level of bad. Like, they are just truly, truly terrible. Mm-hmm. And when something goes wrong, they have no way of actually dealing with any... They got no resiliency. They don't have the skill level. They don't have the maturity. They don't have Corrali that... It's a weird call. It was a bit of a tough call. We never saw, I thought, a replay on it, that offside that led to the Leafs getting a power play opportunity back in their end, which made it, I think, 5-3.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really, really bad teams, they just cannot withstand moments like that where it's the momentum starts to work against them. But I think that it started off with, yeah, the Leafs top players going, there's points on the board. Like, we can chase some points. We don't have to play structured hockey. We go into all-star pawn mode, 3-on-3 mode.
Start freelancing.
Freelance, chase some points and get a couple and tack them on to the season totals. I don't think that at the very beginning of that thing, the comeback was on their mind. It probably wasn't until that third goal.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I guess by the reaction of the first, maybe the reaction by the second, it's not fully formed yet, the idea. But the third one goes in and it's completely there, right? And I guess the frustrating thing is that it doesn't change no matter the personnel, right? Like, this is the same old story. We could talk about general managers and we will today. We could talk about supporting casts and we will today. I guess we can talk about coaches, but maybe to a lesser extent because it's been Sheldon Keefe for a long time here. But the way that we were framing last night beforehand and the way that it resulted was almost too on the nose.
Yeah. You know what I couldn't get out of my head, though, was we had Luke in, right, Gazdick, and he was sitting here saying the case for the Oilers was that sometimes you just need a fresh voice. He's like, no one wants to hear it, but ultimately you can respect a guy, you can like a guy, but the messaging can get tired. And I did wonder that, as like, the Leafs are they've got a great record this year. You know, a lot of it is in overtime. A lot of it is the bonus points. We've had a lot of complaints to the point where last year or yesterday's show I said, maybe they're not getting enough credit because of the lack of, you know, regulation losses. But I did wonder, when they keep having those sleepy starts against some of these bad teams, what the eventual shakeup is going to be, or whether or not some of those guys have just stopped listening when it comes to games like that.
It'll be a new or different way we frame the matchup tomorrow night, Hockey Night in Canada, because Kyle Dubas does make his return, and we'll bring in our first guest on the program today, Elliot Friedman, Hockey Night in Canada, 32 Thoughts. As mentioned, the wonder kid, or the wonder kid that was, Kyle Dubas, back in the city. We'll be back inside Scotiabank Arena for the first time tomorrow night, but it won't be a media tour, Elliot. Is that rooted in the messy-ish departure or the messy-ish start for the Pittsburgh Penguins this season?
I think it's more like, Justin, don't pour gasoline on the fire, right? You know, I think that when the Leafs went into Pittsburgh a couple of weeks ago, same thing. He turned down all media requests. He didn't talk to anyone as far as I know. And today he's doing the exact same thing. And tomorrow, I'm pretty sure we requested him. And I mean, if he's going to turn down us, who can he talk to, really? No, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a little bit too much. But I'm not surprised. I think it's just don't pour gasoline on the fire. That's what this comes down to.
When considering Dubas now, Friedge, you know, the word autonomy is the first thing that pops into my head, because there's a belief that he was chasing autonomy here with the Maple Leafs. And then he goes to the Penguins, and he comes out, I believe earlier this week, at the start of this week, having to defend, you know, Mike Sullivan's position and field questions about the poor start for the Penguins. And, yep. And I feel like with Pittsburgh, despite all the money and all the security that was presented to him, that he might not have the autonomy that he craved, that even Mike Sullivan might be ahead of him on the corporate hierarchy. Do you think he got what he wanted by going to Pittsburgh?
Yes, I do. The one thing I sometimes you forget, Justin, is that everybody has a boss. And when I say you forget, I'm not talking about you specifically. I'm just talking about people in general. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got a boss. Everybody has someone that they have to answer to. Like even, you know, the people at the top of the Rogers, they got to answer to the shareholders sometimes. Like nobody goes through life without having to explain themselves to someone. And, you know, Mike Sullivan obviously has a lot of power in Pittsburgh. But aside from the ownership group, Fenway, Kyle Dubas has the hockey power there. He is the guy. And you don't hand someone a 7-year contract and say, oh, okay, we're going to have a lot of people second-guessing you. No, you give him the 7-year contract and you let him unfold the plan. Like, I think the thing is, like, I've asked those questions about coaches being in trouble before, and most of the time you get the same answer. Like, you have to ask the question, and sometimes you hope for a surprise, but generally you get the same answer. If Kyle Dubas in any way, shape, or form is thinking about changing the coach there, he's not going to, you know, he's not going to tip his hand. He's going to do it when he is ready to do it. And I think the one thing that Pittsburgh knows is that if they were to fire Mike Sullivan, no matter how much time is owed to him on his contract, and I think it's 3 more years, he's going to get hired by someone almost immediately. I think the Penguins know that. But, you know, like, I just think that Dubas has the flexibility and the power to make the decisions whenever he's ready to make them. And, you know, he's basically 25 games into his time there. So, you know, he's got a lot of time to figure things out.
So how do you think the relationship with Shanahan and Tree Living compares to the relationship with Dubas and Shanahan?
Well, I think this. I think at the beginning, the relationship with Dubas and Shanahan was very good. I think it just kind of it grew apart over time. And, you know, like J.D., I mean, like I'm at home right now. I've been married to my wife now for 13 years.
Congratulations.
And thank you. Believe me, it's a lot more congratulations for me than it is for her. But I know that there are days where she cannot stand me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, time just goes like that. And I think with the pressures of the job in Toronto and I think Shanahan and Dubas were aligned on a lot of things. But I think as time grew over, their philosophies split a bit. I think there were things that they disagreed on, but ultimately somebody has to make the final call. But I really think that they were going to find a way to work it out until the Dubas press conference last year. JD, the Dubas press conference last year changed the direction. I really do believe that Shanahan looked at that and said, I have to make a change, because he thought Dubas was burnt out and maybe wasn't all in. And whatever fissures they may have had, I don't think they were unfixable until that press conference occurred.
Yeah, but when Dubas did leave, though, there was a lot of discussion, like you just mentioned with Cuthbert, about the autonomy and how he doesn't want to have a boss, or he felt like there was some difficulty when it came to moves that he wanted to make either being vetoed or taking too long to be able to get done. And I just still remain curious if the Leafs tweaked some of that, hearing that feedback, or if they felt like, you know what, this is an unjustified complaint. This is the way that we just do business here, and it's going to remain the status quo when Tree Living is the GM.
I would guess that Tree Living and Shanahan's relationship is the same as Dubas and Shanahan's relationship when they started. I don't think Shanahan hires Tree Living unless he thinks he's going to be able to work with them and they're going to be able to work together. I don't think that. Like, you know, basically, if you ask anybody else who was spoken to about the position, it's pretty clear that Tree Living was the target from minute one. And if he had, as long as he didn't completely blow the interview, JD, he was going to be the guy. And that's exactly what occurred. Now, you know, I think this, like any, like, Shanahan is still the boss. He has the big title. He's the one who deals with the board. He's always going to have that say. And like, I don't think Tree Living came in at all without anything but eyes wide open to that. Shanahan is the boss. And as long as he's that position, he's going to be the boss. Do I think Dubas wanted more of that control to himself? Yeah, absolutely I did. But I think I also think that even a day or two after Dubas had that press conference in Toronto, he still wanted to be the GM of the Maple Leafs. He actually sent an email saying he still wanted to be the GM of the Maple Leafs. But at the end of the day, that's when Shanahan decided it was time to move on.
SportsSense Elliot Friedman on the line. Comparing these two, Tree Living and Dubas, I think they stumbled into fairly similar scenarios where you have a pretty firm core that you're trying to build around, but they did take markedly different approaches. I mean, Dubas was very aggressive, traded for Riley Smith, went out and got Erik Karlsson, 3 years for Achari, 6 years for Graves, re-signed Tristan Jarry. It was a patient approach, though, for Brad Tree Living. He did go 4 years with camp, but Klingberg won, Bertuzzi won, Domi won, Samsonov goes to arbitration. What do you make of the different approaches here? I remember, you know, Tree Living talking about interior versus exterior view. He wanted the interior view before he made a ton of decisions. Do you think that that paid off more so than it's paid off here for Dubas, and that there might have been some dangers in the aggressiveness that Kyle showed right away?
I'll say this. I think that if you take a look at Toronto and Pittsburgh right now, I think in a lot of ways they're in the same situations. They want to contend and they want to build back up their prospect pool. Like, Toronto's in a better situation standings wise than Pittsburgh is. They've done a really good job this year, especially with their defense being decimated. Pittsburgh's going to have a much bigger battle to make the postseason than Toronto is. However, if you look at the Maple Leafs, they don't have a huge prospect pool. Now, it looks like they've hit something with Minton, and it looks like they've hit something this year with Cowan, but they don't have a ton of draft picks, and they really don't want to trade their first this year, especially for a rental. So Tree Living is trying to put together the best team while keeping his best younger assets. Pittsburgh's doing the same thing. I think in a lot of ways, Tree Living and Dubas are in similar positions. Where Tree Living has the advantage is his core is younger, and I think his depth is a little bit better. And, you know, that's the difference between these two teams. Now, this year, like, Tree Living has never, like, this year he didn't do term guys, but he's done a lot of term in his past. Look, they traded for Huberto and gave him 8 years. They traded for Uyghur and gave him 8 years. He did some free agent deals before in Calgary where guys got big deals. I think that this whole year was all about, they got Matthews signed. Now they got two more to figure out. And until they can figure out Nylander this year and Marner next year, It was, let's not run ourselves into trouble cap-wise. So it was always going to be short-term. It was always going to be maximum flexibility. And that's what they're doing. I think until they know where they're going with those two players, I don't think True Living was going to bring in a ton of term.
Okay, so you mentioned it. Like they don't have a ton of depth when it comes to prospects. They'd be reluctant to give up their first-round pick.
Yep.
The blue line market as of today, like I was watching you guys on the broadcast yesterday discussing, you know, what the fits would be. And it's been basically, you know, Tanev at the top in terms of the most likely to land here, but then a few other names of maybes when it comes to right shot defensemen that could fit in the top four. Do you see, how do you see the defense market playing out here? Because it's a ton of parity this year, right? There's a lot of teams that are going to be in the mix. Nobody wants to give up that position in the first place. Like, do you see this situation being one where it's going to be prudent for the Leafs to bide their time and wait on that to see how things develop? Or that what we're seeing right now is more likely to be what we see come deadline day in March?
Well, I think they really looked hard a couple of weeks ago. Like, when that Zadorov deal went down, you know, I've reported, JD, that they tried to get both guys. They tried to both get both Tanev and Zadorov. So that was a situation where Calgary knew they had a deal they could make with Vancouver, and they basically told everyone, if you still want Zadorov, you have to make it work with us now. And around that time, when Toronto was really beaten up, I think they were looking around. I think they were trying to figure out what they could do out there. And they realized that at the time, there unfortunately just wasn't much. So now you've got a situation where the way they're playing, they can relax a little bit. Last night aside, they've generally played pretty well. They're getting points in a lot of games. They're winning. Their points percentage is one of the best in the league, which is actually pretty amazing. They can relax a bit. I think that, put it this way, I think if they give up something of quality, JD, it's going to be for term. Like, that's what I really think. Like, you look at Zadorov. Zadorov was a third-round pick and a fifth-rounder that was like a Vancouver tax. You were trading to him in our conference or our division. Give us one more pick and we'll get it done. So, and that was about normal for a guy like Zadorov. I think Toronto would have really liked to do something like that. I think if they're going to do something more than that, it's going to be for someone they think they can keep. And I'll say this about Tanev. If they do trade for him, I think they believe they're going to be able to keep him.
So you mentioned the balance, Friege, that Pittsburgh's also trying to weigh here with building back up the prospect system, but also winning now. And Sidney Crosby puts the urgency there a little bit more, perhaps, than it would be with the Maple Leafs. I mean, he's playing so magnificently this year. He's almost not protesting, but demanding something with his performance. How are they going to satiate Sidney Crosby in Pittsburgh if they have to have that balance?
Boy, that's a great question, Justin. I don't have a great answer for you there because they don't have a lot to trade. One of the things that has changed about Dubas over time, and a couple of other teams have pointed this out to me, was he used to be all offense all the time. And then what he did with his forward depth was he realized that in the playoffs, even if guys score for you, you're in big trouble if those lines give up goals. So he started to go more for guys who, like, their net was like zero. When they were on the ice, their numbers or their performance dictated that maybe they didn't score a lot for you, but they didn't give up anything. And he began to think that was very important. And he's kind of done that a bit with like Pittsburgh's depth. But I think they have to find better depth players. And those don't necessarily cost you a lot of money or a lot of draft pick capital or prospect capital. I think that's what he's got to do. I think when I look at Pittsburgh, the biggest problem isn't their top players. I just don't think they're deep enough. I think Toronto's deeper than them. I think a lot of the teams in the East are deeper than them.
Yeah, that first line's been on fire. Not much else after it, which is interesting because Kyle Dubas is specialized in bringing in talent around the margins. I look at what Treliving's done around the margins, and maybe you could say he's doing what Dubas did so well even better. But that's just one of plenty of storylines for tomorrow night. Pittsburgh and Toronto, Hockey Night in Canada. Freed, this is your debut on the Fan pregame. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you know what, guys? It's my pleasure. And, like, I've been on shows before and never been invited back. So I know how good my appearance was or wasn't, depending on when Gentile calls me
okay.
next.
Okay, we'll keep that in mind. Thanks again, Friedge.
Thank you, guys.
Was Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts, and, of course, Hockey Night in Canada. Interesting stuff there, particularly with the Maple Leafs and their desire to hold on to some of the prospect capital.
You think Dubas regrets it?
No.
Like, if he's in do-over?
No, I don't think so.
Because he did write that email that he wanted to stay on the job. And right now the Pens stink. And there's really no room for them to move. They also are tied to really good core players. Like, if you're tree living or you had been Dubas and you stayed in Toronto, like, it was clear that you had to keep Matthews. But you had flexibility to move Nylander at the right price. You had flexibility to move Marner at the right price, right? I know Marner has a no trade, but still, I'm sure something could have been worked out with those parties.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you still have more in the cupboards here in Toronto, which is shocking when you think about it with Pittsburgh, but you don't have that emotional tie like Pittsburgh has with its players, which is, you can't trade Sidney Crosby. You can't trade Evgeny Malkin. Look at the former regime had to pay those guys. They had to bring back Letang. They had to bring back Malkin because it was way too weird to let those greats go finish their careers in Red Wings jerseys like Patrick Kane is right now. So it's like you don't have ways to move. You don't have cap space. You don't have a lot of, like, you can say, hey, you got autonomy, right? Right? You went, like, he's got more autonomy.
I don't even think he does.
But yeah, but to do what?
Yeah. I mean, just to basically run out the string on Sidney Crosby, which sounds terrible, but that's right. The case, right? Like, until you actually turn it over, I don't think he has that autonomy. I just think he wouldn't do it over because I think he went in and said, hey, choose one. Mm. And they chose someone else. I just think it fizzled to the point where he wasn't going to, he wasn't going to be happy where he was.
Mm.
And he knew he could get a lot of money, he'd get a lot of term, and he could do something completely different that wouldn't have the headache. That was whatever the situation was.
Why did you write the email then?
I think it was
like,
a ploy.
This is the Lisa Simpson. Listen, why did I have the bowl, Bart?
We did a whole week last week on conspiracy theories and how, like, you get to point A from point B.
Yeah.
I feel like it was a calculated move that didn't work out the way he intended.
I think that's the case as well. It's just like when you were going over the autonomy stuff, you went, yeah, he's got more autonomy. I went, but isn't his boss now just Sidney Crosby?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
the coach has better standing.
Yeah. It's like
the coach makes more decisions.
Right.
At least we think. Okay, it's time for Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. We'll get to the picks in 1 second. We got about a minute and a half here, but I do want to pose one question.
Sure.
I have long shot prices on Dak Prescott to win MVP. I have long shot prices on the Buffalo Bills to go to the Super Bowl.
To go to or win?
To go to. They play each other this weekend. It's important that Buffalo wins, but Dak Prescott needs to win in order to win an MVP. Not necessarily, but he needs to win some games down the stretch for sure. So what should I be cheering for tonight or this weekend?
Yeah, I think you're cheering for Dak.
Yeah?
Yeah, because it's a tight MVP race at the top. And did you see Cam Newton's rant today? It was actually pretty brilliant.
Was it a second rant?
Yeah, it was a second.
He was ranting the other day, wasn't he?
It was a second rant. And it was a good rant. And it was a damn good rant, okay? Yeah. He basically went in on what he meant by game managers. He didn't really walk it back, but he just wanted to say, like, let's stay on the message, not make it about Cam Newton. And I went, oh, this is actually pretty good. Anyway, he pointed out what I think a lot of us think, which is, hey, Brock Purdy, as great as he's played, he's not the reason that they're winning these games. Dak Prescott, as great as he's played, you could probably put another quarterback in there and they would succeed given the rest of the pieces that have been around him. And so I think that the strongest case for Dak Prescott is that they're going to maintain their winning record and win games like these, because we all have that underlying Cowboys doubt, right? Of, okay, you beat the Eagles, but they've kind of stunk the last couple of weeks. They beat the Bills and they go on the road and they do it in deciding fashion. And Dak Prescott has like a 300-yard game. I think you seal up that bet. I actually think that this is the week where he can get it done.
Quick picks, because we got 30 seconds. I'm going back to the well. We plus 800. It's plus 750. Alt overs, Pascal Siakam, Trae Young points.
You picked the sexiest picks. I feel like the biggest idiot whenever I do the second. This sucks. Yeah, okay. Yeah, fine. Cowboys money line.
Because
I'm rooting for your bet. I like the Cowboys.
Let's catch them all then.
It's a good price. It's a good price. I just did plus 750. Are you even accountable to these? Like, you just have to do one a year?
No, I'm not. Okay. Yeah. Will Lou, after the break, we'll tee up Hawks and Raptors.
Your daily dose of everything NFL. It's the Fan Checkdown with Matt Marchese and Donovan Bennett. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Fan pregame, we'll get to Will Liu in 1 second here. Just a reminder, my the picks that I'm very much accountable for are brought to you by Bet Rivers. Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. Okay, so I'm heading down to the Raptors game tonight.
Very nice.
I know you are.
Is that your
Scotty
Barnes jersey? Are you going to rip that off the wall?
No.
Are you a jersey guy?
No, not at all. That's courtesy of the Raptors show back there.
Okay,
but you are the ultimate support the home team guy, in my opinion.
Always
spend your money, support the home team.
Yeah.
Are you doing that for the Raptors nowadays?
Nowadays. Can I go for free like you?
No.
I'm not spending.
Not in this scenario.
Does it cost money to go to the Raptors right now?
Mm-hmm.
No. Like if I was a celebrity like yeah. Will, you know, if people were coming up to me and saying like, is that the guy from Big Head Coffee? Is that the guy from the Raptor show? Is that the guy who has, like, is the owner, I guess, of the Scotty Barnes jersey that hangs up during the Fan pregame? Maybe. Like, if I had loving fans. But no, the product itself, I'm not overly interested in right now, if I'm being frank.
That's completely fair. And yeah. It is free tonight for me.
I will say going to a Raptors game is still one of the best experiences in the city, and a Friday night Raptors game is as hot of a ticket as you can get.
It's like, good. Yeah. And it should be. There may be, you might be able to count the stops on both your hands tonight between the Hawks and the Raptors. So it will be entertaining. It's just the Raptors, they're not giving you much to be too excited about. So let's bring in our next guest, Will Liu, courtside, host of the Raptors show from 2 to 4 on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I mean, it's got to be good from courtside, though, right, Will?
I'm not a courtside, guys. I'm in the 600s. So when you guys talk about me getting the special access, that's from the 600s. So
we were
I got
informed.
A view of, I believe, every single person in the arena so far. It's like a bird's eye view.
We were informed you were courtside. We got bad intel. We were told that you were getting full celebrity status, and I was like, damn, that's
nice.
You
can't trust our producers. You know that.
Yeah, you get the Drake treatment. You get the seat. He's sitting next to Devlin. He's just chopping it up, having a drink.
You know what I'm looking at? I'm looking at all the retired banners. You know, I'm looking at Matt Sundin.
Yeah.
Tim Horton. Is that?
Yeah.
Is that actually who it is?
You know what? Don't do this.
I don't know.
You know what? Everybody's taking shots right now. Like, Raptors unwatchable. You're trying to guess who's on the banner. It's like, it doesn't need to be this way. We can have peace and harmony.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to the rematch. I mean, again, it'll be an exciting night at Scotiabank Arena because the Hawks and the Raptors can definitely fill it up when they're playing each other. Mm. Is there any reason to be, after what we saw on Wednesday night, that there's an added level of intrigue? How about I put it that way, JD?
You know, added level of intrigue. You know, we're talking about two teams that are fairly desperate, right? Like, both the Raptors and the Hawks thought, perhaps erroneously, that they're better than what they are. So both teams very much need this win. I think the added level of intrigue is just seeing the team for the second game in a row. You can see more adjustments towards each other, and I think the Raptors can definitely improve on what they did against Trae Young in game one. Like, Trae Young had 35 points and 17 assists. Now, he got cooled down the stretch, and Yaka blocked him a couple of times. But, like, for the most part, he tore apart the Raptors. So can they do a better job of covering Trae? And from the Hawks' perspective, I do wonder if they're going to change up their coverages. They saw the Raptors make 18 threes. Are they actually going to press up and respect the Raptors from three? My guess, probably not. But, yeah, I think for me it's just a tactical thing because you rarely do see, like, back-to-back two teams playing in the same arena with a day in between a practice. So let's see if they can improve upon how they cover each other. But, I also do think it's going to be a high-scoring affair again.
Yeah, okay. So there's the game within the game, right? That's you and Justin being live, you being there, you being immersed in it. For me, I'm looking at the game outside the game, above the game, right? The outside step, which is – these two teams were rumored to be talking about trades during the offseason, right? And now we're starting to see the, like, little spicy sprinkles. Like, Jake Fisher had a report today about, you know, Keegan Murray's name and the Sacramento Kings trying to get involved in the Raptors players. And when I watched the Hawks, and they didn't have the Andre Hunter, the former fourth overall pick, who, you know, doesn't have very good advanced numbers this year, and I've never really been overly enamored by. So we didn't get to see him in that first Raptors game. But if the Raptors and Hawks were to come together on a trade, do you think they even have the pieces that would interest you if they were asking for Pascal Siakam?
I think they have a lot of guards. And if you were to trade Pascal, I would love to see the Raptors add more guards to their program. With all due respect to weekly Raptors show guest Dennis Schroeder, like, he is the one guy that I think you can consistently play in, like, an NBA winning team. You know, like, everyone else is sort of, like, really questionable. Gary's obviously off to a slow start to the season. And I say slow start. It's been, like, 22, 23 games. But he's underperforming. And then Malachi is doing his very best. But, you know, most winning teams wouldn't be playing and sticking through this. You need more talented guards in the pipeline. And so that's why I actually came here early just to see how Kobe Bufkin was doing. That was somebody that the Raptors brought in for two workouts. At the time of the draft this year, they had the 13th pick. And they could have taken Kobe. But it's, instead, they went for Grady instead. But I wanted to see how he was doing. If AJ Griffin was going to get any shots up, I didn't see him much today. Those are the type of pieces that the Raptors are looking at. The thing is, like, you're trading an all-star player many times over in Pascal Siakam, and you could say the fit, you know, all this and that, that's fine, but, like, you're still trading an all-star for two guys that aren't even really factoring into Atlanta's rotation. And I get that they got Trae Young and DeJounte Murray, who play the majority of minutes at guard, but if you're good, you can you're good and you're going to play. And those two guys, I'm not saying they're not good, but they're not even in the rotation. So, you know, if that's the main piece you get back, then you might have to look elsewhere for some of these discussions. I mean, obviously, the reporting in the offseason was that, you know, the Hawks wouldn't even give up a guy like Kobe Bufkin. Well, he barely even plays, so what gives?
Has he played?
I don't think he's played much.
Two games, I think.
Basketball reference.
I was going to say, I was not aware if he has.
Two memorable games.
Yeah.
So Pascal could be traded, or he could be extended and at least be a Raptor for another 6 months. It seems like there are two extremes, and either could play out given that this situation just does not want to clear itself up. So if we're talking extension, whose court is the ball in when it comes to this? Like, is it on Siakam to be like, okay, yeah, I can do that for this amount of money for this long? Or is this something the Raptors are, like, actively mulling?
I think the ball is in Pascal's court because I think he's actually okay either way. If he finishes the season out with Toronto, goes to free agency, he's going to have plenty of offers for him and he's going to get his number. Or if the Raptors want to extend him and he's obviously cool with staying with the Raptors, he's comfortable here, he likes the organization, he gets his money either way. So I think for the Raptors, it's really a question of what amount of term do you want to give Pascal? When do you want to get the timing of this done? You know, if you want to read into these kind of hints, what, last week I saw Pascal's agent, Todd Ramisar, one of his two agents, come into the building. You know, if you want to say that that was just a coincidence, all that kind of stuff, I mean, who knows? But, you know, regardless, like, there is at least, like, an incentive, I think, from both sides to sort of get this thing done. How much talk they've actually done is more questionable. Like, I see Bobby Webster probably, like, 200 meters away from me. After this hit, maybe I'll try to talk to him and ask if we can get a straight answer on this. My guess is no, though.
Will it happen without assurances? Like, they're not gonna, you know, pull the wool over his eyes, right? Like, it's just not gonna happen. They're not gonna sign
him. They shouldn't.
Like if it happens, like, is it like, yeah, we're investing in Pascal Siakam and we're about this partnership moving forward until something changes.
Well, look, you either deal him now or you extend him. I think getting him to free agency, I think, is just a little too risky. We literally just saw that episode with Fred VanVleet. And the difference, I think, with Fred is I don't know if they anticipated that Fred was going to get a full max, or at least full max in terms of the dollar amount for 2 years from Houston. But it happened. In the case of Pascal, at least it's like wherever he's going to go, he's going to make the max. He's that level of player. But, I mean, yeah, look, you got to see what teams are willing to offer right now. And if you don't really get it, then what are we doing? Let's stop wasting time and sign him to this extension. You retain the asset. I think that, yeah, I mean, the hesitancy for a lot of teams trying to trade for him right now is whether or not they're going to have him for rental or they're going to have him long term. If they got assurances from Pascal and his camp that they're going to, you know, be cool with going to this team or that team long term, then whatever. Maybe you actually get a fair package for what you return. If you don't get that, which is the issue that they ran into the offseason, then you're not going to get good enough trade packages to even move in the first place. So I don't really see how the situation for the Raptors has changed that much, or even the situation for other teams trying to trade for them. But who knows? I mean, we do know that all the GMs will be going to the G League showcase in next week. And so, you know, maybe they'll gather there and make some more conversations. But ultimately, the situation is not too dissimilar from what it was in the offseason, which is kind of funny that we're still here. But I guess this is just the nature of business and trying to find the smallest moments of leverage to try to one-up each other.
Yeah, with the Hawks in town for at least one more night, and there'll be several more nights if we're being honest. But the Atlanta Hawks did shine the spotlight on Siakam and the potential trade given what we heard in the offseason. So we'll be talking about it before, and we'll be talking about it after tonight's game. We appreciate you coming on, Will, and we'll be catching the Raptor Show 2 to 4 weekdays on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, thanks for jumping on with us.
Appreciate you, man. Enjoy the game tonight.
I will. I will. I really will.
You know what I think is so interesting about the situation is that, you know, if they, if you tell fans right now that they're re-signing Pascal Siakam, and like, when Will said assurances, I think he was alluding to, hey, no, that he would still remain open to being traded at any given mm-hmm. point, which is kind of an oddity for an extension. Like, I don't know how something like that works. I would have thought the assurances that you were talking about were more his camp saying, we like Toronto. We don't want to be dealt from Toronto if we're staying here.
Yeah. Right?
Like, we want to be in the Seattle. We want to be in the Toronto business.
Like, because if he's going to play somewhere else, you'd want to make
just
that
do
decision.
It now. But yeah, so if you're looking at this from a completely rational asset management standpoint, then trading Siakam for anything other than full value when he's by far your best asset in the trade is kind of nuts, right? Like, he's your best player. He's one of the best mm-hmm. players in franchise history. Just moving off him for the sake of moving off him sounds like bad business practice, especially in sports. But also, like, this is an entertainment product. And people here, I do not think, would be very excited at the proposition of, hey, don't worry, they're bringing Siakam back, and they have extended him for a five-year contract, and he will be a part of the core. Also, that kind of the next domino to that is, well, if he's staying, then that means OG's going. And I think OG, given his age, given the defensive prowess, the way that he kind of more is a natural fit next to Barnes at times, or at least when it comes to a rebuild, like, it's a tough one. It's a tough one for a franchise that has had such a tough time in the past retaining its superstar players. For fans here that, you know, always bemoaned losing guys or bemoaned players that didn't want to be here, that they actually have a guy who can get you an easy 30 in Siakam, who has been on record in saying that he wants to be here. And yet it feels like if you re-sign him, you're going to really deflate a large portion of the fan base.
Yeah, I mean, I look at OG as being the far more tenuous situation. Like, losing, like, if there's just not a market, and there will be, but if it's just something that's not going to placate fans or placate Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster, like, if you lose him for nothing, like, this is a guy, I have more confidence in OG Anunoby moving on to a team and really, truly elevating them. I'm not sure it's going to work as seamlessly with Pascal Siakam. Mm. I do think that signing him and then endeavoring to trade him once his value will be lifted by signing him, especially if it's not the maximum of the max.
Like, is it, though? Is it if you're really trying to pivot to an era of Scottie Barnes and now you feel like it's still Pascal's team and it's kind of indefinite?
Because... No, but I think if you trade him at that six-month cycle, you get to the draft, maybe you can dump him on a team that is a little bit more desperate for that number two option, and then suddenly you do get something back from the return at the draft that could, you know, get you know, spur on this sort of rebuild that is stuck in the mud because you're still connected to the past timeline.
Yeah, to be honest, I just think that they missed the actual ideal window. The ideal window for them
very possible
was right after that Sixer series when they saw what they had in Scottie Barnes, when Fred VanVleet really struggled again in the postseason with size, when Siakam started that series really horrifically and did turn it around, and then the Raptors ended up giving them a pretty good series, like a good push, a good punch. That was the time. That was a pivot moment for this team. That going into that year when they drafted Scottie Barnes, they knew this was already the discussion point of what road are you going to take? And Masai kicked the can down the road that year. And he said, you know what? We made the playoffs. Maybe we're building something here. Maybe this can all work. They took that risk of not moving some of those players like Fred, like Siakam. They brought them all back. And every year has been this, which is fans waiting for a deadline to make a move when this is not a general manager who likes to get pushed around. This is not president. It's not a president that likes to, you know, take a haircut on a deal. He wants maximum value. And I just say, like, at what point are you going to say enough with this stuff? Like, you know, you could say extend a player and then maybe they'll trade him down the line. It's like, we really want to be having this conversation again for another, you know, year, another 2 years. Like, when is it just you got to compromise on the value and accept that you're not going to be able to get back as much for a player as you could have during a different timeline?
And you're considering, like, the morality of, oh, we'll sign him and then trade him. I mean, they did right by Fred, right? And it burned them. And if that happened, that could very well happen again. And if you don't play the cutthroat game, then you just might be stuck with something that you don't want and you wanted to move off from years ago. Let's go back to the Leafs discussion.
Sure.
You know, talking a lot about Brad Treliving and Kyle Dubas, comparing the two, where we're at now, and it, we'll call it the trust tree or our trust in tree, whether we feel differently about where the Leafs stand.
The trust in tree, like the Justin tree? Is that what you just said?
Our trust in tree.
Oh, trust in tree. I was like, you're like, it's the trust in tree. It's my Justin Trustin.
Okay. Yeah.
Who is Justin?
That's too much tree.
That could be your segment, is who is Justin Trustin?
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad. Okay. We'll put it that way then. We'll do it for the first time. Who's Justin and JD Trustin?
No, don't have me.
Well, that's me. Because you got to actually answer my question.
I'll set you up. I'll be like, okay, all right. So, Tree Living, Dubas, and if you could have either GM right now, today, who is Justin Trustin?
It's an interesting one. I mean, I think I soured a little bit, maybe a lot, on Kyle Dubas. Stopped drinking the Kool-Aid to a certain extent when the team was the same despite efforts to make it different. Like, yeah, it's cool that you can find things at the margins. You can go out and spend a little bit of cash and get some decent impact. But now that I've seen what we've seen this year on the blue line for Treliving, like, it's the same game, but it's done in a way that actually might be more beneficial to these teams' needs. Like, we talked a lot about Lagesson and Benoit and how the depth defensemen have stepped up for this team and really, really salvaged parts of this season. And they're doing so while taking shifts with a guy like Connor Timmins, who was kind of the Kyle Dubas depth add on defense, who is actively struggling beside him, beside one of those players, whether it's Lagesson or Benoit. And I just think we just grabbed onto this notion that Kyle Dubas was going to take this team, was the smartest option. Maybe the best of Kyle Dubas is what we were losing by letting him walk out the door, because he did learn on the job, but boy, did he ever get to learn, right? He learned while he was building this team and having these playoff failures. And I think just by simple returns from Treliving here, that notion was proved to be a little bit faulty.
Mm. Were you ever a Dubasite?
No, not really.
Okay. I was at the beginning. I was very much like, I had the glasses. I was ready to rock and roll. I went, this is the right move. This is the right time. This has to be done. And then, yeah, as the years wore on, I think, like many people, you started to question the actual body work and went, wait, okay, so the prospect pool is not great. There's not a lot of great talent that's coming up and supplementing this core. Some of the signings, yeah, you can evaluate them if, I guess, they're on these minimum deals as all right ones. But in general, they were the kind of signings like Spezza, who was coming home to play, right? Mm-hmm. Or Giordano, who they traded a second round pick for, but then also decided to leave money on the table. Like, those ended up being kind of the best values around the roster. My main thing with this is, I'll always wonder what would have happened had Dubas stayed and whether or not a trade would have happened, right? Because I feel as though part of Dubas staying would have been had to be something a little bit more drastic. Like, maybe the core isn't all returning. Maybe as of today, we're watching the Toronto Maple Leafs and they took a bigger swing during the offseason, because he would have had the equity and the understanding of that team to feel like they had reached their natural end. Trey Living came and it was like, you're just trying to hold things together. The front office was in flux. There was a lot of talk, but like widely reported, that the Leafs front office and their organization was in kind of disarray with people splitting between two camps. Mm-hmm. Treliving came in, made good with the coach that was Dubas's number one guy immediately, started to steady the ship, and then built kind of, you know, the moves that he could make. The things I like about Tree so far, he maintained the flexibility moving forward. They didn't sign some kind of contract, like, say what you will about the Klingberg deal, which they did get lucky on the fact that he's on LTIR, and the Reeves move. There's nothing really that's hamstringing the Leafs moving forward here. He didn't come in and just decide, you know what, here, you're getting a four-year deal. In fact, I think that there's a really strong argument to be made that Treliving's best deal was not giving Samsonov a contract extension after what was a mostly brilliant year, where, again, guy was 19-3-3 on home ice last year. He was their bona fide number one goalie. He stepped in there. You probably could have got him at a reasonable rate for 4 years. How would people talk about that right now? What I like about Treliving is the feeling of, this isn't an all-in time with this team. The feeling of, you know what? You got this flexibility. You can make a lot of moves during the offseason this year. If the Leafs end up making a move for a top four guy, I think that's one that we'd all like to see. If they don't take a massive swing with what limited assets they have remaining, I think it's because there's not going to be something that's out there that they feel like is a, you know, that they're under some big time constraint. The reason why I guess I'm long-winded getting around to saying I trust Tree Living more is that I don't think Tree Living is going to be feeling that same pressure that Dubas was feeling as the Leafs general manager at the end of his tenure, where it was always, this is all in, this is all in, this is all in. You got to capitalize, you got to maximize. It's a little refreshing knowing that you're going into a year where you kind of go, could go either way.
And I don't think Kyle Dubas was able to escape from that pressure, because I mentioned it with Friege, what he did July 1 and on, just spent. It's like, I finally have financial flexibility. I'm going to go out there and just spend and do what I want in my own, you know, fantasy hockey world, right? Mm-hmm. Like, let's go get Erik Karlsson. I've been talking, I've been thinking about Erik Karlsson forever, mm-hmm. and now I can go get him. And Riley Smith, 3 years with Achari, re-signing Tristan Jarry. Goaltending has been Kyle Dubas's bugaboo his entire career.
I thought about that.
And he didn't even get to look at him.
If he was here, does he re-sign Samsonov?
He probably would have.
To long-term, I mean.
And that would have been, that just that moment alone, mm-hmm. the Samsonov thing and the Jarry thing. Like, Jarry's had a good season, actually. Mm-hmm. But Jarry's been up and down. And he just put full investment right into Tristan Jarry. And for that reason, I was like, well, you haven't learned. Like, you keep spending in a way that is going to allow for it to come back and bite you. Mm-hmm. And Tree Living was patient. And the one thing, though, and you mentioned it, Klingberg. The one thing is Klingberg. Like, how much did you know? Because if you just, like, that's the first priority, was Reeves and then Klingberg, $4 million for a guy who has not performed very well for a couple years now. Mm-hmm. That seemed like the ultimate roll of the dice. Honestly, reckless spending. But if you're like, you know, we arrived at the point where we have arrived, where he's on Robida Island, and there was like a pretty reasonable idea that that was going to happen, then I can't fault you on it. But I could fault you on it if John Klingberg was just here and you couldn't get rid of him, and he was playing poorly, he was hurt, but he was rehabbing and he wants to come back. Like, if that was the situation where Klingberg submerged your season, then any equity he's built up, it would have been lost.
I was going to say, I do feel as though that injury has changed a lot of the Tree Living conversation.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
It's like, if he's still playing, then we don't see that. We're not talking about how he nailed Lagesson and Benoit.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about how much are you going to have to pay to get off of this contract? So, like, there's that we should acknowledge that, like, there was a pretty fortuitous bounce for Tree Living. And even some people like me, and I don't know how you couldn't, given his history with injuries. And they've refuted it, and they've said that they didn't think that this was going to be the case. But you had to wonder if there was some kind of a quiet conversation between the two parties that was like, hey...
I hope there was.
Hey, you've had some tough goes with injury. Like, would you be comfortable going on LTIR if this is even, like, a debatable thing? But it's like surgery, so it's a pretty serious thing. It's hard to believe that this was some kind of, like, big picture mm-hmm. smart move from Tree Living, or that he and Klingberg were there. But even still,
but if it flares up, this is what we're doing.
But don't you still feel like the fan base now is giving him more of the benefit of the doubt, like that he was playing chess, not checkers? And when in reality, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. The other thing that I actually just like is, man, what did Elliot say at the very beginning? He went, this is more like the beginning of Dubas and Shanahan. And I just think that you're better off as an organization when you have two people who are more comfortable and more eager to work together rather than two people who are at odds or who have a long history of, you know, or have some history of animosity between the two of them. You know, relationships can get stale, and at some point you want to try something new and feel refreshed. And I think overall that part of it being kind of more in harmony with an actual plan, whether it works or not, is probably going to be beneficial for the Leafs. So yeah, give me Tree Living.
My initial worry was that there was some caretaker vibe about it, right? Like, this is the Lou Lamoriello. Hey, Lou, come in. We'll use your connections. Kyle will learn from you. It'll be great. You can make the calls.
Yeah.
We'll figure this all out. Tree Living, well-connected, right? Makes the calls. Everyone knows him. Yeah. Very respected. And if it's like, hey, you're not trading from the core four, but we want you to surround it, what better person to have than a caretaker who knows just about everyone? But the fact that he has made these small moves, the fact that he has restored faith from the people that work under him, I think that was not fair for me to immediately assume that.
No, it's really insightful of you. You're a good guy. you weren't being fair.
Listen. Yeah. So the trust is in Tree.
I, on behalf of Brett Tree Living, will accept your apology.
The trust is in Tree. We'll work on the naming of that segment. But yeah, it's a big one tomorrow night. Hockey night mm-hmm. in Canada. Maple Leafs and Penguins. Kyle Dubas may or may not be in the building. We'll see if he's roaming around. Will they get a private box?
You better be there.
Will they just stay at home? I guess we haven't known for sure.
He'll be there.
But we'll see tomorrow. That was the Fan pregame. Thanks, JD, for jumping on with us.